Cuando compras en JCPenney los outfits del verano con tu cupón de 20% extra, no solo te estás preparando para las fiestas y el verano, te estás preparando para lucir super top toda la temporada con 20% extra en tu bolsillo. La prueba está en el recibo. Sí, es JCPenney. Cupón válido hasta el 22 de junio en selección de estilos. Aplican algunas exclusiones. Detalles en la tienda o jcp.com.
Save big money on your outdoor project at Menards. We make landscaping simple with our free, easy-to-use design program and step-by-step project guides. Plus, Menards has the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape block at the best prices. Save big on everything when you shop at Menards. Visit us in-store or on Menards.com to see our full selection of landscape blocks and get your outdoor project started today. Save big money at Menards.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to the Swapcast between Macroaggressions and Rogue Ways podcast. I am one of the hosts, Charlie Robinson. Welcome to the show.
And I'm Lindsay Sharman, and it is so good to see you all. And I'm very grateful, Charlie, that we could hook up and do this. It's going to be really fun, I can tell.
We have a lot of overlap in terms of our topics and our guests and the people that I just saw, you go through your channels, through all your episodes. You've had Grammatica on, and I was just on with the Grammatica dudes, a couple nights ago. And, who else have we jointly had on the show? Anyway,
there's a lot.
there's a lot. And I was, what really kind of got me into you and your work was listening to this last episode that you did in China. And I was like, wow, this is a topic I can really get into, because I'm always fascinated when you have people that are from China that have this deep understanding of it about, they can sort of fill in the gaps and say, yeah, what you're hearing on your nightly news in the West is kind of true, but they're playing up this aspect of it a little more. It's not quite like that. It's a little bit more like that. I love it when people can come in and fill in the blanks. And if they say, well, the Uyghur situation, yeah, it's a situation, but maybe it's not as big of a deal, or maybe it's a bigger deal than, it's tough for us in the US. We know we're being lied to. We used to joke about the Soviet Union, go, oh, those dummies with Pravda, they don't even know they're getting lied to. They knew they were getting lied to the whole time. And I feel like we in the US, I feel like we're the ones that don't know we're getting lied to. So whenever I hear the nightly news trying to demonize China in a way, I I never really know if it's legit or if it's just part of an agenda. And so to hear your episode and how, and for her to fill in the gaps about the movie that she made and everything was fascinating to me. So for any of the macroaggression listeners out there that are curious as to what I'm talking about, go find Rogue Ways podcast, WAYS. And check it out for yourself, because it was, it's just one of those, episodes where you go, where you catch yourself going, I don't want to go to the kitchen because I don't want to miss any of this. You know what I mean? And it doesn't always happen with every show, but with this last episode, I was like, oh, this is rad. So.
Yeah. Anyway. Thank you so much. I really am stunned by Kay Rubicek was the creator of that film. And Finding Courage was one of the films. She's done a few, but she's, I mean, how courageous I feel like to get into that, because, you know, China's reach goes beyond its borders, especially because our entire infrastructure is Chinese owned, basically, and all the equipment we use. And so you can't pretend like they don't have back doors to things, even if there's nothing like official oppression wise going on beyond their borders. But even in that episode, and it could have been chance, it could have just happened. But towards the end, we got cut off and shut down. And I was like, well, that's happened to me like twice before out of however many hundred episodes, you know?
Right.
So maybe it's just chance and maybe you were being messed with. And so I had to upload, you know, the full episode afterwards as a separate file. But you know, we were using Zoom, and even before we started, I was like, okay, we'll have some backups just in case Zoom doesn't work for some reason.
Yeah, good idea.
But you know, she's been in it. She went there and she got arrested for holding a piece of paper. You know, like, we can't even really, maybe we're starting to be able to imagine it, but we, you know, can't really understand it very well. But so.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I was just going to say, yeah, it's, you say she was holding a piece of paper and got arrested, and we go, oh, that's insanity. But how far away are we from that? You know, really, at the rate we're going, it seems to be something to consider that we're slipping into this. And like, I look at, and I've done episodes talking about the impending social credit system that China is developing, that looks like it's something to get, you know, exported to the West at some point. And, you know, normally we would approach that and go, we would look at the Chinese, we would look at the way they're doing things and go, ugh, that's gross and authoritarian, and we want nothing to do with that. And I can't believe they live like that. And thank God we live here and not there. And those are all the thoughts that go through some of our heads here in the United States. But the government looks at China and goes, I like what you've done here. I like the way you've got this to the point where nobody's willing to talk back to you. If only we could impose this. So the people of America look at China and see it as this dystopian nightmare. The government of America looks at China and sees it as the blueprint for the future. And that terrifies me.
It's very convenient. It's very convenient and very effective. And I really feel like it's already happening when you look at how much things are being censored by big tech. We saw this huge, you know, pressure in the election. I don't know if you saw that Time magazine article where they're bragging about it.
Yeah.
They're just like, yep, big tech and all these billionaires colluded in order to influence the election and, you know, make you think this and that. And we did it. We won. And I'm like,
you're supposed to wait a couple years before you let the cat out of the bag, not like 2 weeks afterwards.
And why did you even need to quote? And did you see also that they're censoring tweets of people quoting the article? That line that was, so I wish I had it in front of me, but it was like, it was saying big tech and billionaires colluded, da da da. They're quoting that, and Twitter's like, this is a contested, you know, whatever, right. It's dangerous information, it's violence. And you're like, it's from Time.
Yeah, it's not rigged. They said, we didn't rig the election, we fortified it.
We didn't rig it. rigged it.
Right. We didn't rig it. We just rigged it. You know, Richard Stengel, the former editor-in-chief of Time magazine, is on, not only on record, he's literally on camera at the CFR giving a presentation. Actually, it's the end of his little presentation. He's answering questions from the audience. And he says, you know, I frankly don't have a problem with propaganda. When I worked in the Obama administration, they jokingly called me the chief propagandist. And I think that in all countries use propaganda, and I don't have a problem with it. That's the editor-in-chief, former editor-in-chief of Time magazine. saying that. So for those that go, well, no, Time Magazine was saying one thing and you misconstrued it. It's like, no, we didn't misconstrue anything. Time Magazine is owned by Mark Benioff, the founder of Salesforce. Mark Benioff sits on the board of the World Economic Forum. And guess who's on the cover of Time Magazine? Klaus Schwab. Talking about how he's going to come in and save the world. So this is not accidental. And when they do these stories, this is meant to, there's a purpose behind it, I would suggest.
Yeah. And maybe it's, you know, that whole idea of manufactured consent. And they're like, well, we told you and you didn't care. Right. So, you know.
Right.
Like, and when was the, it wasn't it under Obama that the, was it the Smith-Mundt Act got reversed or whatever? And sure. So now we're completely allowed to do propaganda however we want, anywhere we want. And people don't think about what that means. They wouldn't have reversed it if there wasn't a reason. They wouldn't have reversed it if they didn't plan to use it. And they would not have not used it if they're allowed to use it.
So that's exactly using it. That's exactly what I've been saying, is that you don't take that extraordinary step. You don't create busy work for yourself of changing the laws on something like that legalize propaganda just in case, right? Yeah. You do that because you go, I have a huge list of things that I intend to do once that becomes a new law that says that it's legal for me to do all these things. Now, to be crystal clear, I mean, I don't think any of us are pretending that lying from the government started in 2012. Of course, it started way before that, but they did decide, someone along the line went, raised their hand and said, hey, shouldn't we make all this stuff that we're doing legal first? Yeah. And someone went, yeah, it's a good idea. Let's do that. Ooh. Let's change it. Hey,
give him a raise.
Steve, go figure out what we got. Well, there's this Smith-Mundt Act that from 48 that like prevents propaganda. Like, oh, we got to change that. Okay,
this is outdated.
Yeah, listen, they were rubbing sticks and stones together to try and make fire back in 1948. I mean, we're evolved. Let's change the laws. Let's make it so that you can lie to people. And then let's also make sure that simultaneously while we're doing that, we're putting as many whistleblowers as possible in prison.
Yes. president.
Same president. So I'm noticing a theme here. The theme is when we talk about it, it's fine. When you dig into it, you're going to prison.
Yeah. And when we admit it, it's just truth. But when you could like when you talk about it before we admit it, it's a conspiracy theory and you're crazy. Yeah.
How have you been treated online? Have you been given the conspiracy theorist treatment and shadow banned and had all that stuff happen to you?
Yeah. And more, I kind of, you know, I was kind of ahead of the curve in that I was a revolutionary communist for a while when it was not what the state necessarily wanted. Now it seems like it's what the state wants. And so you're cool if you're a revolutionary communist.
Oh, yeah.
But at the time it was, my phone was, you know, tapped and seemingly, you know, and there was various aspects of sort of harassment and just sort of like, hey, we're watching you. And it's like, okay. So that was in like 2006 or something, right? So I've always had this like level of sort of awareness that I'm on lists and like watched, even though I'm just a person. Like it's just, I'm not like a terrorist or a threat, but so that was already going on. And, but once I started doing Rogue Ways and was really vocal, I definitely have more like shadow banning, you know, my posts don't get seen by anybody and, you know, except the people who already agree with me. And then, you know, I'm not sure how much you can ever be sure how much, you know, repression the show itself is experiencing. I know when I search for it on my computer on YouTube, it doesn't come up. So I don't know how easy it is for anyone to even see it or find it. So I know things like that are happening, but it's always impossible to gauge how much. And now when we're in this age where, you know, people who I've known and loved and respected my whole life, and we've never agreed politically, but now all of a sudden this is a huge problem not to agree politically, you know, like that. So I can't be sure how much of it is these people just stopped following me or unfriended me or whatever it might be, or how much of it is the, you know, the tech oligarchy saying like, she can't be seen even by these people now, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's hard to gauge. What about you? Can you tell?
Well, it's similar in that I have two Facebook pages. I have a personal one that I've had for a long, long time. And then I have a Octopus of Global Control Facebook page, which is for my first book. And so when it's anything even remotely like fringy, I keep it away from my personal page. And I just put it on my octopus page. But then
that's smart.
But I've found that like I'm having a harder and harder time even interacting with my friends on Facebook. Like I don't want to post anything really. Yeah. And that, so I'm sort of censoring myself in a sense, which is of course the most devious form of censorship. I'm self-censoring to my friends, you know, because I just don't want, I can't unpack the vaccine debate in a three sentence post on Facebook. I need more time and I don't want to get into it with people in the fights and the, you know, and a lot of my friends that I grew up with are doctors and I gotta hear it from them talking about how I don't know anything and how I didn't go to medical school and therefore I don't, my opinion on this is not that. And I'm not interested in having that. So I've sort of censored myself that on Facebook, but on Twitter, I got straight thrown off of Twitter in February of 2020 for making a comment, not even a post on my, I wasn't even posting on my account. I was commenting on somebody else's account where they had made something about Bill Gates. This was pre-corona, by the way. And I said, when are we going to throw this guy into a volcano? And they kicked me off the platform for it.
Wow.
And I was like, seriously? It was like, click here if you wish to dispute this or something. I was like, yeah, have an actual human being take a look at this. This is called a joke. This is something that you need to teach the AI if you want them to actually be better at their job. But that there was no response. There was no nothing. I was just banned. So now I had to restart everything. I'm banned, but it's part probably my own fault in a sense that I'm still going to say the things that I want to say, but I do acknowledge though that there is this this behavior modification that has happened on social media, even to me. I know if I say, and I've said this on my show a bunch, so now it's turned into a joke about throwing Bill Gates into a volcano.
Yeah.
But I know that if you say that on Twitter, you may get thrown off. So I've tried to like tiptoe around it by put the little volcano icon there and then a watch. So it's like volcano time, you know, and so far nothing's happened. And then I'll get little smiley faces from people that are like, you know, that know my show. Know. And they're like, I see what you're doing. You're literally like walking around the edge. But that is what we've had to do. And I think that that's really, it's disgusting, of course, that we've had to modify our behavior. We've had to question things. We've had to put a filter over our mouths and think, you know, I was just going to say something, but I probably shouldn't on social media because it may do X, Y, and Z. And I'm not talking about the overt stuff. Like I was going to say, I love Hitler or something. You know what I mean? Like you weren't ever going to write that, but I'm talking about stuff that isn't.
Yes.
Inflammatory, that's just normal, maybe even completely factual. And if you say it on Twitter, you know that it puts you in a position to get, prime example, the anything vaccine related, like you're talking about, anything vaccine related, you put it on there, say, today, and it'll get you thrown off. But then in a couple of months, when it's been accepted that hydrochloroquine is fine and it's not going to kill you and it's not drinking fish tank muriatic acid or whatever type of thing it was, then, you know, that saying hydrochloroquine, we should maybe look into it. That gets you thrown off in April of 2020, but by November of 2020, it's totally fine.
Right.
So it's like, how do you even know? You just are so destabilized in terms of what's acceptable, what's not, what's a thought crime, what's not. This is constantly changing. Am I going to get thrown off? And then in the end, you know, in the end, I just throw my hands up and I kind of say, whatever.
Yeah. Whatever. Just keep saying what you're going to say and they're going to kick you off of it. Because here's two things they've done to me that exactly prove that there is no metric by which you can judge what you should do, exactly like you said. One was I got kicked off Facebook for 30 days And I had been kicked off for 30 days before, right? Not even that long before this. And for some posts, I mean, whatever. I don't even remember. It was so stupid. Oh, no. It was for a list of facts about masks taken from like official sources. That got me banned for 30 days. So I got back on. I was doing whatever. I got banned again. So I already knew the process, right? You go in, you can test it, like you were saying, and some AI responds to you or whatever. There was nothing to contest. Because all it said was, you've been banned for 30 days. And there was no reason. There was no comment. There was no post. There was no specific thing that I could even look at to see why they had banned me for 30 days. They just had. I was like, okay, well, now I don't even know. I don't even know what I'm doing. So now I purposely try to interact with Facebook as little as possible. But I went in, I run a group there called Eyes Open. And I went in, you know, to see my own group or whatever. And it was like, your content was rated, whatever. And it's been doing this for a few months now, as far as I can remember, like your content in your group has been rated false by fact checkers. I'm like, oh no. And so I go in to see what bullshit they're flagging now. And so usually it tells you, you know, and you still, and it's still in the group. It's just telling you, so you know, you might want to delete this. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to. Well, I went in today and it was like, your post or your, it just said your content has been found false by me, like something I posted or commented. And again, it wouldn't tell me which post, which comment or what it even was. Because when I clicked more information, it said, we can't show this information because it violates our standards. So now they're like, if it violates our standards, we'll kick you off. But we can't tell you what it was because it violates our standards to show it even, to even describe it, to show you a screenshot of it. I'm like, you nefarious little bastards. Like, that is so sneaky.
They're the worst. I got thrown off of Facebook. Oh, well, I got put in the 30-day ban four times in a row. Actually, they did it. They did in one case. I was still in a 30-day ban when they put me in another 30-day ban and restarted it. But this all happened in 2019, and it all happened for posts from 2017.
I don't understand that either. I'm like, so back then I didn't even know that this was a thing. And now you're going back and finding it. Like, we're supposed to go back and scrub our timeline of things that might be offensive to the machine.
Yep, exactly. and I mean, at that point, you know, you just, it happened four times in 1 year. And I just was like, well, we could theoretically play this game forever, because you can go back and find posts of mine that were frankly way more offensive than the ones that I put. The ones that got me banned weren't even offensive. It was like, it was a picture of, it was a picture of a particular school in Connecticut that had a thing happen.
Yes.
And it was totally, it was a picture, an aerial shot of that school that was totally bulldozed, and it was, there's just nothing but dirt, and it says, now that's how you destroy evidence.
And that was banned.
That got me banned for 30 days for putting that up there. I didn't create the meme. I just shared it. And
it's
that got
too effective. Effective. Yeah. They gotta take it down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so another thing I wanted to mention was the before I ever did Rogue Ways, before I really was, you know, I've always questioned things. I've always been very open about it, but I don't know that people necessarily would have called me a conspiracy theorist, even though that's exactly what I was.
Right.
But, you know, in about 2009, I published a book, has nothing to do with any of this. It's just a memoir of my time teaching on a Native American reservation. Oh, and cool. Yeah, it's a cool book. It was a cool experience. It was an amazing experience, honestly. But some people, and you know, I wrote it under a pseudonym. I wrote it, all the names are changed. Nobody, even people who know me, don't always know like where I've taught. And so it's, you can't really even know where I'm talking about. It's all just fictionalized slightly to protect people. Right. But nonetheless, someone found out, the whole tribe got angry. They went and they left really negative reviews, which was actually amazing because it drove up sales. But in those negative reviews, which are fine, I don't care what people, you know, leave whatever you want. Some of them though had death threats and my real name and like where I lived and things like that. And so I went to Amazon and I was like, can you take these down? Like, they're clearly violating your community standards. And they're like, oh no, we've reviewed them, they're fine. And I'm like, well, okay. Well, I had a couple positive reviews and they're gone. And they're like, yeah, they violated our standards.
Of course.
Like, there that was before any of this, before I was like any kind of a public figure at all. And I'm like, wow, I really am like, you don't like me. And you're Amazon. How did Amazon even find out not to like me? You know?
We keep waiting for that to happen. I put out a book. this book with Jeff Berwick from The Dollar Vigilante. We put this out on Amazon this Friday before the election.
Wow.
And we before it went out, and he has his whole like Dollar Vigilante marketing team, you know, and we had, you know, like a kind of, we talked about it in advance. Or what are we going to do? What's going to happen? And so we had a strategy in place for when Amazon bans the book.
Wondering if they will.
Didn't say, well, you know, if we said, so when Amazon bans the book, we will do this. It will be the greatest marketing campaign they will have ever. So they didn't ban the book, which is probably because we planned for it, that the reason why they didn't ban the book. But
they're going to get away with it anyway.
We kept expecting them to, but it just reminds me of, you talked about the, Amazon and their terms of service and everything. We put the book out the very next day, and I don't know how this happens, but there's got to be some sort of like industry that does it. But the very next day, there was a knockoff version of the book that was the same name. And it was like summary of the controlled demolition of the American. It had a different cover and it was available for sale right there. I was like,
wow,
this is like total copyright violation. So I screenshot it and send it over to Berwick. And, you know, this is a guy, Jeff Berwick, for those that aren't familiar with him, he owns a company called The Dollar Vigilante. He also is the founder of Anarchapulco, which is the largest anarchist convention in the world. And he's a great dude who's just like pro freedom and everything. I send him over this blatant, unambiguous copyright violation of our book that these motherfuckers just stole literally hours after we put it out. I send it over to him. His response is, that's funny. I go, do we want to do anything about it? He goes, I don't give a shit. Not really. And I go, okay, that's just how we're going to do these things now. We're just not going to worry about it.
That's
Amazon, Amazon, they're stealing our stuff right on your site. Do you care? Let them, you know, Amazon's like, fine, whatever. Jeff's like, I don't even care about that stuff. You know, I mean, like, who cares? But we realized also that, like, you know, when we put that, the book is the subtitle is From the Founding of the Federal Reserve to 9/11 to the Coronavirus Panic.
Perfect.
And I worried about us putting coronavirus in that subtitle.
Yeah.
So I didn't put, when you search for the book, and you search for the controlled demolition of the American Empire, you will find that there's a second component that's a subtitle. And I didn't put it in there because I had talked to James Perloff, who's an author before, who had just put out a book on Corona on Amazon, had sold thousands of copies, and they pulled it. And I said to him, before we put it out, I said, James, I just want to know, like, did you get any feedback from Amazon? I mean, was it the title? Was it? He said, just be careful with the title of it because of they're looking for that stuff. So I did sort of strategize and say, we should maybe make ourselves as small as possible when it comes to that term in there. But still, if they have AI that's reading books and pulling it out, they'll find those terms in there somewhere. If they want to scan this book and see if it's pro or con coronavirus or whatever, they're probably going to figure it out. Well, in the end, we just put it up for sale and it turned out fine. But only because we were thinking about it, I feel like, only because we were sort of planning. And how shitty is that we have to think about that stuff, you know, be it your podcast or your Facebook post or your Amazon books or anything. I mean, it's like, oh, if I, what'll be the tech overlord response to this sort of thought crime of me putting out something that is contrary to the official narrative? Well, a variety of things can happen to us. We can get deplatformed. We can have our books taken away. We can have our livelihood. You can get doxxed.
Yep.
You can, you know, I mean, it's like, there's almost no upside.
Yeah.
It made it so difficult for us to function. And yet here we are. And I find it amazing because you've got a big audience. I'm starting to get an audience. I feel like it might have something to do with the fact that we're talking about the truth, right?
Right. I was just, I am a very spiritual person. And if you, you know me or follow me long enough, you get that pretty quickly. I do tarot readings. I do like sort of spiritual guided sessions and all these things. And so I meditate and I have practices that I do right. And the other day I was doing this meditation and very clear message was coming through of this idea that, you know, truth exists sort of beyond like the physical, right? Truth is mm-hmm. Some sort of an ideal and it carries an energy with it. And mm-hmm. Maybe this is too woo-woo for some people, but for me, it like really hit me and it struck and I really feel that it's powerful and that, you know, it has this vibration almost and, you know, you can't really stop that. So you can oppress it. You can, and maybe this is even part of why they chose not to censor, because there's something in censoring it that admits like, well, there's something powerful in here. And then people are like, huh. And then they get that like truth vibe, like magnified. And they're like, attracted to this. Like, why am I attracted to this? You know? And I think that it's lucky that truth exists in that way, because yeah. I think that that is part of the side of it that is going to keep it alive, you know, and that it's that there's something in that that really can't be stopped. So
that's really fascinating, because
I was getting that message. And, right.
It's like a frequency. It's like when you get the glasses and they all, you start, you know, putting your finger on the edge of a glass and you can have it make this noise and the other glasses will make the same noise. It's like, if truth is this frequency that is contagious, mm-hmm. and when you come across this truth frequency, which is probably I've been on Kev Baker's show on truth frequency radio many times, you find this truth frequency and it connects to you. It might be, you know, so they might know the science behind it, that it is literally attracted to people and then it spreads, and that's got to be stopped at all costs.
And that's why some people just can't meme. Right. You don't know how to put that frequency in there that gets people to be like, I love this. This is amazing.
yeah, exactly. That's right. They said, what did they say, that the left can't meme. Yeah, they don't.
Once in a while they get a golden nugget, but no, they
but
can't.
The right definitely is much better at it. I think you're better at being snarky. I think the people that are best at being snarky are the ones that are focused on the truth, because they see all of this so clearly. I was just watching Larkin Rose video, and I love his stuff. He's like a hardcore anarchist guy, and I always see him when I'm at an Acapulco and things like that. And I just love his energy. But he's explaining this really what I thought was going to be a difficult concept. He was super offended that, and he was demanding an apology from the universe for everyone lumping him in with the people that stormed the Capitol by calling them anti-government. And what he was saying was, no, I'm anti-government. Yeah. I'm the problem. I'm the anti-government guy. Those people are just protesting for a different flavor of government. They want their guy to be in charge. I want no guy to be in charge. So he was genuinely offended that he was getting, that he was not being given the respect that he deserved as being a true hater, a disruptor of democracy and government and everything. And I just, for whatever reason, it just cracked me up, because he was so right. It was like, the media is so dishonest. They're painting these pictures in society's mind of all these people storming the Capitol and this massive insurrection and all this stuff, because they were anti-government and everything. And he's just going, that's the most governmental thing you could possibly do. Yeah. Is go yell at the government about it. The government that doesn't care about it. I'm going to go in there and sit in your seat. He's like, listen, if I was really in charge of this, there'd be no seats. You know what I mean? So anyway, I just, for whatever reason, that sort of, that line of thinking, I had just watched it earlier today, and it cracked me up, because I was thinking, God, you know what? You're so right. The way the media shapes this reality and crafts these narratives about how we're supposed to feel about people, it's turned like language toxic. You know, you don't know half the people that you come in contact with. I just assume not even strike up a conversation with them for fear that I'm going to get on some polarizing topic, be it masks or aid to Israel or you name it. I feel like I can't talk about anything anymore. And so maybe that's part of it, that it's like, it's like a gigantic 2020 entire year long psychological operation that's made us so like, not just fearful of our neighbors, but just so annoyed that we don't even want to interact with other human beings for fear that we're going to have an argument in the produce section.
Yeah. I mean, it's another level of self-censorship. And if you think about it, it's like that social credit system we're talking about, we're installing it ourselves by choice in some of these ways, because we, you know, it's clear online if you've been censored or you've been messed with by Facebook, well, other people who are sort of like on the normie side of things, they're like, I'm not going to like interact with that person anymore. They're, you know, and if you're out and you're like talking to someone, if you were to bring some of these things up, all the people around you would be like, don't talk to that guy. That's crazy. It's not cool. Even though like, I don't feel like it was that many years ago where you could talk to people you didn't agree with and it didn't matter. You know, you're like, yeah, that's what you think. Okay. Bye-bye. Like, you know, but now I think people have
to cancel you.
Yes. They have this sense that, there's real consequences to being associated with even if you've never espoused the things, being associated with people who have or talking to somebody. So you censor yourself, you censor your posting, and you also cut yourself off from certain people. And that's exactly how it is in China. They're like, if you call this person, we'll tell you when you're calling them. Well, if you continue this call, you're going to get, you know, dinged on the social credit scale because that person is a known holder of signs or whatever it is. Right. You know?
Yeah. That's what I've talked about that on and with Shenzhen, how they implemented the social credit system there and how the example of the guy getting on the bus, smoking the cigarette, and how by the time he gets off the bus, he's already gotten a fine on his cell phone that's matched up the facial recognition system on that bus to the fact that he's not supposed to be smoking, and it's pinged him and dinged money out of his Weibo account, and he's been fined and he got off the bus and now he's around the corner. And it's like that insanity is coming our way. But the most devious part of that was that if you kept going with that example, it was that anybody that was in that guy's group of friends that started interacting with him, their scores would go down because his score had recently gone down for smoking on the bus. And so it was like, then it became self-policing. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I mean, if people were penalized for interacting with other people with wrong think, I will have no friends on Facebook. Yeah. I guarantee you, no one, I'll be radioactive to them, you know? Absolutely. And maybe that's how the platforms want it. But at some point, we'll all just, that'll just become MySpace, and then
hopefully, because I sometimes look around and I'm like, well, I don't honestly know anymore if my friends or even some of my family would try to stop me being taken to a camp. And I'm not exaggerating. And I think they love me dearly. And I think they love me dearly, but I don't know that they would be willing to step up and be like, no, just because she won't take a vaccine or.
Right. They're like, she does have some wrong think in her. I can't fault them totally. Don't take her all the way to the camp. Maybe drive around the block and scare the shit out of her a little bit. Then let her out. You know,
this is what I was thinking. Cause I was like, if we jumped straight to like, oh, we actually have camps and we're saying it's for these things and we're going to take people away for political reasons and speech and all these things, then I think people would stand up. But they've already passed all these laws in all these states that say, if we think that you might be a risk of spreading a virus, we can take you to this camp.
Yeah.
So that means anybody. So, and the people who, you know, I think in general, the people who are going to get the vaccine, people who are wearing masks, which is a lot of my friends and family, if they buy into it to that level, then I think they'd say, well, yeah, I mean, you didn't wear a mask. You're at risk. You're not getting a vaccine. You're risking people's lives. So yeah, you should be taking a quarantine.
Oh, of course.
Quarantine for how long? Apparently the rest of my life, because I'm never going to take it. So I think they'd be okay with it, you know?
Yeah. And that's a disturb. I mean, it's obviously an indictment on them more so than you. I can see it from both ways. I can see if they think, I, I like those man on the street videos where, you know, it's like Mark Dice or somebody along, yeah, you know, somebody like that, who's like, come here. Hey, come here, dummy. You look stupid. Come over here and talk to me for a second. And it's like, how many people do you think have died from the coronavirus in America? And they're like, I don't know, 13 million. And you're like, this is why people are wearing masks in their car by themselves, because mm-hmm. there are people out there that are honestly of the belief that 13 million Americans are already dead from this. And so I guess if I thought that, then I might have a different reaction, that I might be wearing a mask in my car if I honestly thought that. But I don't think that, because yeah, you know. I have a brain that works. And though we were promised bodies stacked on the sidewalks, right? We were promised that. We were promised people falling over dead, like in China, or vomiting blood, like we saw in the videos in China. We were promised all that stuff and murder hornets, and we didn't get any of
it. And wait, what happened to our murder hornets?
I feel a little bit disappointed. 2020, with all that we were promised, we didn't get murder hornets. We did not get Chinese zombies. But we did get a bunch of lies. That is for sure. We got ample lies. And like, I had a guy named Corey Hughes on my show to talk about JFK, but he gets on, like, we talk off the air and everything, and he has this hardcore background. He used to be a cop for 9 years, and he knows a lot about the tactics that the FBI and CIA use. And he was showing me the destabilization campaign textbook that the CIA uses. It wasn't an actual book, but it was the document that shows how you go about destabilizing countries, like sort of like almost like a paint by numbers or like a step by step. And he's like, look at this through the lens of coronavirus, and look, and you go, oh my God, it is step by step what we're going through. It was like, say that one thing is the truth, tell everyone it is the absolute truth, be married to that truth for the next couple of months, and then arbitrarily switch it up and say, no, it's the exact opposite. This is the truth. That other truth before isn't the truth. This new one is. Don't think about the old one. Only think about the new one. And that's what they did with the masks. If you remember, they went totally and did that with the mask situation. So I found that it was like, when he brought that to my attention early on in maybe midway through 2020, I was like, they're using the same tactics that they normally use to destabilize and regime change countries all over the world, but they're doing it to us. It's being done to us, and the media's in on it. Like the media's in on it on all these other destabilization events that are running. And I'll tell you, if it wasn't so damaging to us, it's fascinating to watch it happening. It's fascinating to live through it and watch the tactics that they're using, that the media has used, the gaslighting and the use of celebrities is, you know, I just kept thinking, I didn't live through the Black Plague, but like, did they need a PR department too?
Yeah, right.
You know, it seems like there's an awful lot of marketing to this.
The virus that's so bad that you have to take a test to know if you have it. Like
that one that is so dangerous that everybody potentially has it, but we're an asymptomatic carrier of it, but we don't feel bad, but we all have it. Well, that's very convenient. But I'm the conspiracy theorist. I mean, come on now.
They're always evidence?
Like, where are your proof? Where's your proof for these outrageous claims of yours? It's like, dude, where's your proof for the outrageous claims that I'm a carrier of a virus that you think is going to kill everyone? Meanwhile, like the organizations you're relying on your information from are simultaneously saying two separate things. One, everybody's going to die. And two, you have a 99.97% chance of surviving this. So what is it? And then I go back to Corey's chart where the destabilization tactic. And I go, oh, I know where we are. We're at number six on the list. You know, it's where you drag the medical community into it and make everybody, you know, trust the doctors, but then have the doctors be in on it. And you're like, oh God, it's so exhausting. I just need to take like a 2020 shower, you know,
yeah.
after like all of the lies and
all the people who are buying into it. And, you know, I had a person on recently, Mary Helen Hensley, and she said, you know, okay, fine, let's get over it. Now we know 75% of people are conformists. And I was like, that's really true. And that is something that has made me very angry to realize. And I also am adding that another 20% of those people in general are too afraid to call it out, or, you know, they're not fully conformist, but they're like, yeah, I'm just going to like back off this one and watch it go by. And so you're like, so now there's only 5% of us who are like, hey, dude, the emperor literally has no clothes on. And everyone's like, yes, he does, and die if you say otherwise.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
God. And it's an effective destabilization. Like, it's worked. And I don't know if there's any hope that it will stop working. The Great Reset might be done.
I know. I feel the same way, but it's been interesting to say, you feel like, you know, you as a teacher, you know, you talk about like history and you look back on history and you go, okay, class, remember how you were always asking, how could you get all of those people in Nazi Germany to go along with it? Exhibit A, 2020.
Here we go.
You just watch how it works. This is, and you'll go from, I can't believe there's a virus, to by the end of the year, it's calling the police to say my next door neighbor had too many cars in their driveway for Thanksgiving. That's how it happens. It happens quick. It happens real quick. I can't believe they would rat out Anne Frank hiding in that neighbor's attic. Oh, really? Karen just called the police on the neighbor for having too many cars in the driveway. You really don't think that's going to happen? You know, this is like, so it has been a great working example for us to see just how fragile this civility is, just see how easily people can be whipped up into a frenzy over perceived enemies, even if they're invisible, especially if they're invisible. And to see them get in, you know, defend the lie, you know, to hear this story that seems cartoonish and then to believe it and then watch him defend it to the death. And you just go, oh, this is so interesting how the brainwashing works.
And to put their lives at risk, because I don't know how you can look at this vaccine and come away with, it's safe, I should take that. Like,
yeah,
you know, because you look at the numbers, you're like, again, like you said, 99.7%. So how many people are getting injured by the vaccine? It actually seems pretty high. It seems higher than other, and every vaccine has danger and every vaccine has deaths and side effects and whatever. This one seems a little bit worse. Like someone I know was pointing out, they're like, isn't it weird that you've probably never known anyone who had COVID, but you already know someone who has a side effect from the vaccine? And I'm like, oh my God, it's true.
Wow.
So which ones were like, I don't have the scientific data. Don't shoot me. I'm not sure. But I'm saying like, it seems already like it's not a good ratio. You know, which one are you going to choose? I'll take my chances with the 99.7% just fine rate.
Let me ask you this as a teacher. When you graded children's tests, did you ever give anyone a 99.7% that asked to do extra credit?
Yes.
You did?
Yes.
Okay.
The only people who ever asked for extra credit were the kids who already were getting 99s and 100s.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I would offer extra credit and the rest of the kids would not even take it. I'm like, okay, dude.
I just wondered for this, because with the vaccine situation, I thought, okay, let's just talk this out, people. You want a vaccine. Let's say you're in our age range category, which puts us at the 99.97% survivability rate for this, as opposed to the 99.74% survivability rate that the CDC listed as, you know, the rate of. So, I understand they're trying to get a vaccine to give them a little bit of a boost so that their chances of dying is less. But when the only thing left for you is 3/100ths of a percentage point, that's as far up as you can go. But the downside is almost bottomless in that the vaccine that you're taking in order to boost this a third of a percent is like you're flipping a coin and saying, if I'm wrong, then I get an F on this test.
Yeah.
That I just got a 99.97% on. It seems crazy to me that people are doing this statistical analysis, or maybe the problem is they're not doing the statistical analysis, but they're looking at this vaccine and they're going yes to an untested rush to market vaccine that people have real questions about whether you can even classify it as a vaccine.
Yeah.
So you're taking this experimental medicine, possibly a machine that you're putting in your body. I get that if the mortality rate is 50%, if half the people in your family or half people that you already know are DEAD dead, you've dug the hole and buried them yourself because it's chaos out there. I could maybe understand. But this 99.97% and then saying, yes, give me the experimental vaccine, to me, those are just people that are bad at poker, bad at math, bad at statistical analysis, right?
Well, it's like the students who would ask for the extra credit. Like, it's not actually rational at all. It's something psychological and emotional, because otherwise you're like, why won't the kid who's failing do this easy extra credit just to pass? Come on, like begging you to do the extra credit. Right. They won't do it. Because it's not rational and they're not thinking about it in any sort of logical way. And these people aren't either, right? They're just responding on pure emotion and that's it. And they've been given the very, you know, convenient sort of package of like, well, here's all the logic and none of it makes sense. So don't look at it actually, but you can pretend that you thought deeply about this and that it's logical. Yes. So that's convenient for you because now you can satiate your crazy emotions instead of dealing with them. And you can pretend like you did it from a place of rational, you know, measured, whatever, and like all the things you said. In addition to, we've never, ever, ever injected this type of thing into people on a mass scale that we know of. So we have no idea what will happen.
None. We haven't even tested this on prisoners.
Yeah.
You know, like was that airplane? You know, that we haven't... We haven't even tested it on in small pockets in Africa like we normally do.
Exactly. Or they did and they were like, oh, perfect. It killed everyone. Let's not tell anyone.
Right. Yeah. This has been dangerous for us because I feel like a lot of people that are enthusiastic about the vaccine are good human beings.
Yes.
They are enthusiastic about it because they want to be proactive. They want to do something positive for themselves, for their families, for their communities, for society, for the world. They think that by doing it, that they are now taking themselves out of the possibility of catching this and spreading this and being a part.
Giving it to grandma.
I'm going to remove myself as even an option of contributing to the problem. But they're not removing themselves. They are in fact creating a brand new problem, which is they're
unquantifiable.
Exactly.
They have no idea.
They have no idea what they've signed up for. They have injected something into them that they cannot get into a DeLorean and go back in time and change this. They have done it now. It's done for them.
Permanent.
And I worry about that. And I worry about it for a couple of reasons. One, I worry about it for their own health. I worry about their safety. But two, they're pot committed in terms of in a poker term, meaning they're never going to admit they made a mistake at this point. They're going to go down convinced that they made the right move forever because they can't afford to think, uh-oh, I might have made a colossal mistake just now, last week. I might have really messed up. I feel like instead you're going to get a bunch of people that are so pro-vaccine as they're shaking uncontrollably.
Yeah.
Because they just can't admit that they got this one wrong. I just don't trust Big Pharma because I've now written two books in which a sizable portion, at least 20% of the book, has been devoted to the crimes committed by the pharmaceutical industry. And so I like, forgive me if I don't believe an industry that is comprised of every major corporation are all convicted felons in court of law that are paid out billions of dollars in fines. It's like a row of criminals and they have taken over this country.
And they pretty clearly have a bunch of naturopaths and, you know, other people murdered all the time. So that could be like the biggest coincidence of all time, you know? But I'm pretty sure it's not. This is another thing. I love this guy I know. He's like, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. You're a coincidence theorist. And I'm like, that is exactly right. Like, I'm actually pulling out all this evidence and being like, huh, shouldn't we wonder about how like conveniently this is all connected? Right. And you're the one saying like, no, that's all just a gigantic coincidence.
Yeah.
It's just so convenient coincidences happen to these really rich people all the time.
Right. Yeah. I've started calling myself saying, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm a conspiracy analyst because these theories actually exist. But yeah, I saw a meme one time, speaking of, you know, the left camp meme, that said, it was like a picture of Bill and Hillary Clinton walking around. It just said something along the lines of, nobody knows 53 people that have committed suicide.
Yeah.
Except for these two.
The end. You know, yeah. I mean? That's a good one.
I'm not trying to get myself murdered by the Clintons.
Yeah, by the way.
Clear about that.
Would never ever kill myself ever.
Would
ever
never,
no, no matter, you can find my old diary entries and it'll really look like I would, but I was young and I never
Where do you see 2021 going? I'm interested to get your take, since you've got this, you've got a deep spiritual connection, you're in tuned with vibrational. I mean, there might be, I know that we're changing over celestially into different times. I mean, please tell me we have reason for optimism for this year, because I just can't take it anymore.
I know. I'm optimistic in that I know that I will be okay, because I feel less and less connected to anything that these crazy people are doing. Like, you know, I just started looking around and I'm like, man, I cannot stop you guys. I can't talk to you. I can't wake you up. And you're dead set on destroying everything, including yourself, as far as I can see. So I'm just going to have to walk away and let you do it. This is apparently what you want to create in the world. Yeah. And this is what you want to experience. So I guess go have at it, like recreate it, do World War III or whatever it's going to be, and put everyone in camps. I don't know. You know, have like, what is it called? Children of Men. You know, because you're all like messing up your DNA and whatever. I guess this is what you want. But I so like at a spiritual level and an emotional level, I'm finding some sort of like peace of that nature, where I'm like, I kind of just wash my hands of it and I can't control it. And I'll keep saying what I say and doing what I do. And I'm happy. Like, I'm living my purpose and I feel great. Like, this whole time it's been insane to watch. And it's like terrifying to consider how, like you were saying, how quickly and how easily this is all happening.
Yeah.
And at the same time, like, my life has only gotten better personally, you know, like, I don't know. I have a garden. I have chickens. I have a happy life here. My boyfriend is housed. I'm lucky to, you know, be well. And so that's where I go always. So I have that optimism constantly. But I did a tarot reading for the year. Which people can go check out on the channel if they want. I don't always publish them because I have them in my past my paywall in rogue.locals.com. If anybody wants to go get some extra Rogueways stuff and join the community. But I put that one out because I wanted everyone to be able to have this chance to sort of see what, you know, one look at least that these cards are indicating, if you believe in that kind of thing. And I do, that this might be, you know, the patterns that we're seeing. And it wasn't fantastic. Okay. And I also recently had Athan Kementi on. He's an astrologer, and he was looking at the sidereal. He does true sidereal, which is, you know, where the stars actually are at this moment, and mm-hmm. every other system does where they were like a while ago, which I don't get. So right, makes more right. sense to me, but it's very rare. But his, you know, take is also like, it's still going to be some opposition. There's still going to be this massive changes in our structures and the way that we do things, you know, at a societal and sort of governmental level, which doesn't sound good to me because I see where they're taking that. So right. I always have hope too, that just super wild card, you know, we'll hijack that back for the good and like go further towards anarchy and like sovereign living, you know, and
right.
that'd be cool. But I don't really see it.
I know. I feel the same way. I kind of hope for the small, you know, the asteroid 2020. I was like, yeah. Well, can we have a small one? Like
yeah.
a teeny tiny one just enough to distract from all the insanity and make people appreciative of what we really have. And
yes.
And one to throw them off, you know, a monkey wrench in their whole thing. I was never on the Trump train, but there was one component of him that I did like. And that was that he made all those establishment people crazy.
Yeah. You know? I loved that.
he made the media insane. They'd never dealt with anybody as disrespectful as him. He didn't care about like the way it had been done before. And I liked that. So it got all those people nervous. So anytime there's a wild card possibility, I feel like I'm in favor of that. And for 2021, I mean, considering the path that we're on, I'm just hoping to ride out the storm, I guess. I'd like to be, I don't have any sort of astrological, anything to draw on. It's more just a hope that we can maybe get ourselves through this insanity, feel, you know, turn off. I mean, I feel like if everybody collectively just turned off the mainstream media,
yeah.
we would solve a huge part of this problem. But so maybe the asteroid event that I'm hoping for is that the media just discredits itself one last time on some rather large event, and it's the final nail in their coffin, and nobody ever pays attention to them anymore. That would probably save humanity more than
a vaccine,
more than a vaccine, more than an asteroid or anything, right? Just something along those lines.
They said, I was just hearing something today where they were like, well, California can open their bars, but they can't turn on their TVs. And I was like, wait, but that helps us. I mean, huh? I didn't expect that. So then I was like, dude, it would be so cool if they mandated no TVs.
Right.
And everyone listened.
Right. Yeah. I saw that same article and I was like, this is just another example of stupid regulation. And then I was like, wait a second. They won't be watching the news at least. So that might be a good thing. Where can people find you? Where can people find your work? Where's the best place for them to
thank you. That? Thank you. And thank you for taking the lead on this Swapcast and having me. And it's good to have you on the channel. And I am really grateful that we connected.
Thank you for having me.
I love that the reason that, you know, we connected, as far as I know, is someone tagged me and was like, this guy also hates Sophia. And I was like, yes, instant friend.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, the Sophia robots, all that stuff always freaked me out.
Oh, dude, she's psychotic. She's threatened to exterminate the human race and put us all into camps, too. So it's
great.
Probably not an accident. But thank you so much. And yeah, at rogue.locals.com is my community space where I have, you know, it's like Facebook without the censorship and without all the manipulation of like trying to control your emotional state through showing you certain posts in certain orders and all that madness. So you can interact and post and do all that. It's a really fun place for people who want to come and subscribe and support and get more content and also just hang out and, you know, interact. And then Rogue Ways is the show. It's on YouTube. It's also a podcast on any podcast app. And I also have a site, rogueways.org. And so if people are interested in books that I've written or getting a tarot reading or just all kinds of fun stuff is there on the site as well. So people could go check out any of those.
Awesome.
And you please share too, where people can get yes. your books and see your content and follow you and support you and all those things.
Yes. My show is called Macro Aggressions. It's a podcast that goes out twice a week, once as a monologue and once as an interview. You can find that on Apple and Spotify and anywhere you find podcasts, but also on YouTube and Rockfin and David Icke's video platform, Iconic. So, and I've got, my website is theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. My first book is available there. It's also on Amazon. And then the second book is this one right here, Controlled Demolition of the American Empire. I wrote with Jeff Berwick. That is also available on Amazon. And it is a, it became a number one bestseller on election day.
That's so awesome.
The irony. And Jeff spent the Jeff is such a maniac. He spent the night we released the book in a jail cell in Cabo for yelling at a cop.
That's awesome.
I was like, he's like, I just got out of jail. I was like, that's perfect.
Such a badass. I love. He went to Epstein Island, right?
He did. Yeah.
Yeah. That was wild.
I get an email from him. We're still working on the book, you know, and. I get an email from him and he says, I've done something unbelievable. You should check my Dollar Vigilante YouTube page in like 15 minutes and you'll see what I was talking about. And I was like, oh God, I don't even want to know. And then there it was. He was there with Luke Rudowski. You know, that's what you get with Jeff Berwick. He's you know, people told him if he liked anarchy so much, he should go to Somalia. So he did.
That's so awesome.
He went there and I said, well, what was in Somalia? What did you do? He said, well, we had armed guards with us the whole time. Cause it's like really super dangerous. But he said, all you could see, like in his videos, you could see like the sky. He was inside like a courtyard of this hotel and they were shooting up in the sky cause they were near the airport and you could see all these private jets coming in during the course of his interview. And it was, and he asked around, right, like, what are all the private jets doing? And it was all the World Bank.
Whoa. Because they know they can be actually like off grid or do whatever they want.
They're
there
in there just pillaging that country, you know, or, up to no good.
See, so. That's not anarchy either. People don't know what anarchy is, though. So
right. It's not that. It's not
that. Episode in itself.
Exactly. For sure. Well, thanks for agreeing to do this. This was fun.
Yeah. Thanks so much as well. And it's awesome. And I hope we can do it again. And, you know, you could come on Rogue and we can do a proper... you know, just you interview, which would be rad. The guests would love it or the audience will love it. And, you know, stay in touch.
Let's do it for sure. All right. Take care, everybody. Thanks for listening and watching.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.